is cheesy. The plot is stupid.
I'm sorry, the plot is bad.
That's a little opening.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to an exciting ARG event.
Yes.
The brand. You have arrived on a very special day because today's the day we take an in-depth look for maybe like the third time on the Commodore PET.
Well, but more specifically, Aaron,
yeah,
the genius, the man behind all of your favorite non-release titles for the PET, Jim Summers. A little bit of highlighting involved.
Well, I mean, this will be a very short summary of the works of Mr. Summers, but we'll get to that in a little while.
Yes.
The Brent. It's Commodore PET Day. I got to ask you, you know, last time I saw you, you were all beat down.
Yeah.
You look pretty spry today.
Yeah, I'm doing okay.
Was it because that we spun the Commodore PET last week that got you fired, so fired up that it shook off all the illness and you took over?
I obviously, every time we've done the PET, I've thoroughly enjoyed my experiences. Yeah. And this week, we've done the PET two times previous.
Yeah.
This week might be the best games I've played on the PET.
Oh, man. And don't overbill it, but yeah, you might be right. So, you know, since we've talked about the PET a few times, I'm just going to go to a brief summarization of the PET and a few things I didn't even know. So the PET dates back way back, Brent, to 77. January, it was demonstrated at the Consumer Electronics Show in Chicago. And according to the guy who wrote this, and I had to look, and he actually backed up his work when he said this. He said the PET was demonstrated months before the Apple II or the TRS-80.
Yeah.
So the PET was like an early home microcomputer.
And it does not get the respect it deserves.
About it. So, like, just for fun, Brent, what do you think the PET was selling for back in the day?
I know the answer.
You do know the answer.
$1,300.
Yeah, well, somewhere in that ballpark. And
depending on your memory.
Yeah, your mileage may vary. Just a little bit about the PET, of course, much like Commodore's other systems, born in the USA, standing proud with a Commodore Basic built in, which basically Commodore Basic was Microsoft and did the work on that. You had the famous, on the original model, the 73-key chiclet keyboard that looks like it came from another planet. When you look at this machine, it looks like they shipped it in from the moon. Big monitor built into a big crazy box with a weird keyboard. And this had a 6502 proc in it, monochrome screen. And you think to yourself, these stats don't sound that good. And on top of everything else, you know, you probably had the 8K version. Not that much K, Brent. But
no, plenty enough K back then.
Well, it was enough to do some pretty good stuff, the Brent. It had a lot of things going for it, including expandability and stuff like that. So you had a lot of nice action out of the PET.
Yeah.
When you got it, they weigh a ton. If you ever need a boat anchor, you can just tie a rope around this thing and you'll be good to go. So they were a good machine for back in the day.
Absolutely.
Now, I want to touch on one more thing before you hop in, which was, you know, this is our third go around with the PET. And I thought to myself, you know, there was some, because the games we're going to talk about today were not sold games.
Correct.
And I thought to myself, I wonder how many games back in the day actually were like boxed. Like, I mean, because I looked, and we'll get into it, but the games we're going to be looking at are games based on games based on other games.
Yeah.
And
Sort of.
Like one of the games is based on was for the TRS-80, came out the same year in a beautiful, glorious box, you know, box copy. And I thought to myself, wonder why we weren't getting down the PET. And so I did a little research, just a smidge of research. And there were some outfits that released box games on the PET. The number one box game seller was Avalon Hill. In a time where people were selling games in baggies, Avalon Hill was selling games in beautiful, glorious boxes that are sort of reminiscent of their boxed game releases of that era. You know, what do they call the old bookcase games? You know how nice those are?
Yep.
And Avalon Hill games, and just a few that I saw boxes for were B-51 Nuclear Bomber, which I believe is that the text-based bomber game, I think. Voyager 1, Lords of Karma, which I love that. The Andromeda Conquest and Acquire had a box for it. So that's kind of cool. We covered Acquire in one of the other shows.
Yep.
A few other games. I read that Epics had some boxes for games on the PET. The one that I saw a picture of was Temple of Apshai, or is that what you call it? Temple of Pashi back in the day. A few other games I saw that had boxes for various dealers were Morlock's Tower, Space Invaders. There was a series called Arcade 1 and 2. I saw that those had boxes. Cubic, and then Microcomputer Games, which you also covered this game on another show, did Telengar. They had a box copy of that. So there were games that were being sold as early as 1980, 81, 82. But back in those days, you still were mostly getting the old plastic bag treatment.
Yeah, yeah.
And even
not a whole lot of publishers putting the money in.
Yeah, and even in the early days of, like, I remember going to the Radio Shack and seeing all kinds of cassettes that were in bags. They may have a manual, they may have a color manual, but they didn't have a box. They were shipped in bags. And of course, if you look at like the Coco stuff, they famously shipped most of the Coco cartridge games in just like the same generic box.
Yeah.
They're box, but they're not like, they didn't make the box.
Maybe put a different label saying what the game was, but that was it.
Now that's a little rundown of the sold software, but the subject of today's show, he never sold a thing.
Yeah.
Give us a scoop, the brand.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about Jim Summers. Jim Summers is from Waterloo, Canada. And
Waterloo, let's sing it.
No. And we're actually going to go backwards through his life. Well, we're going to talk about
Benjamin Button.
The most recent things first. This man is a college graduate and has his PhD in computer science.
Mm.
So he's a brilliant man.
Big brain.
He has worked on different technologies. Networking was something he was very passionate about. And he's worked at a couple companies doing software and tinkering lightly with hardware for these people, making them very successful. Usually sticks with a job until the job goes away for whatever reason. Before that, he attended college at Waterloo University, like I said before, for computer science. And before that, he was a normal high school kid who was just introduced to this world of computing. Now, Aaron, I think you said that you read this. Do you remember what computer his father would bring home on weekends for him to experience and play around with?
I did. It was the Ohio Scientific Challenge.
Ohio Scientific. That is correct.
We covered that a long time ago. What a fun episode that was.
So when I read that.
I was so happy to see that.
I was so stunned. It made me smile from ear to ear. His parents weren't rich enough to just give him a computer, especially at such a young age. But his father would bring home that Ohio Scientific and let him play with it and tinker and start learning the ins and outs, and it got him excited. And eventually, they were able to swing getting him a PET, a Commodore PET. $1,300. It was the 16K version.
Big memory.
And this would put him at about 14. And he was a normal kid who was into the video games. He would go to the arcades, he'd play those, and he would play computer games, and he loved playing computer games. But the problem was he didn't have access to a lot of them. Just like you said, the PET didn't have a lot of box games at this point, especially go to a retailer, pull it off the shelf type of stuff. And even if they did, he didn't have the money to go out and buy that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So what did he do? Well, he did the big brain thing. And he said, all right, I'm going to make games. I'm going to program my games so I can play them. But the other reason why he did this, Aaron, was he was attached to BBS's, pulling down the few bits of software that he could get. And for those who didn't experience BBS's back in the day, they do a thing called ratioing.
Yeah.
And what that is if you want to download something from a BBS, you have to contribute. You have to do something too. So he would write a game and then upload it and get his ratio up. And so once he uploads something, he could download something from the BBS.
That's a slow way to do it.
Yeah.
Because BBS is just to get back to that for a second. The ratios are set by the sysop, the guy who ran the BBS. So sometimes it'd be like 4-1.
Yeah.
Sometimes it'd be 10-1. That would mean like every time you uploaded something, you could download
10 times worth of stuff. Yeah.
And then sometimes if a system was a particular jerk or they had some very tasty wares, it would be 1-1 or 1-2.
Yeah.
It'd make you really work for it.
Yeah.
And so when I was reading that interview with him, he mentioned that like he was always looking for something to upload to get the ratio. And I'm telling you, there were all sorts of alternatives. So if you ever wonder why BBSs were always full of like low, incredibly low level porn or like tech stuff like Anarchist Cookbook. So that stuff just got passed around, including by me.
Yeah.
Many times.
And I mean, and also depending on your sysop, some people would take your stuff, see if it was actually quality before they'd give you the ratio.
Yeah, that I hated because that's when you were busted. That's when you got busted real quick.
So I would assume that that was what he was experiencing because what he uploaded was three of the most sought after and classic pet games to ever be released. How sought after were these things? Well, these never went to market. He never approached a publisher about them. These were things that he made with obvious influences from the things that he was playing at the time. But these were all him writing the code off his home-owned pet, just trying to get something for him and his friends to play and for him to upload to BBSs. Selling it was never part of his thing. It was never on his mind. And for those to exist from that sort of beginning to find their way on the internet, you know, 40 years later is amazing.
Yeah.
It is amazing. These are the type of games that are so often just lost to time. Because, you know, you have to rely on someone physically taking that media at some point and getting it to the current year.
Yeah.
And a couple of these games were lost. My game in particular that we're going to take a closer deep dive look at was lost for a long, long time. And it was, people remembered it. People remembered playing it and wanted to play it again, but no one had a copy to actually get dumped into a ROM file and get up on the internet. So what did Jim do with this amazing talent? This was a talented programmer. Even as he reflected back on his programming prowess, he said, you know, I did this wrong. I just wasn't experienced. I was self-taught. This should have been better. And he learned all that as he went through school and found better ways of doing things. But since he did not follow that video gaming path, and he says that, you know, he has no desire to come back to it because projects nowadays, you can't do with a single person, or it takes an incredible amount of dedication for a single person to pull off a title of AAA quality. And I believe all the games that he made would have been AAA quality back in the day. I honestly feel that. So the one game we're not going to go into depth with that he made was called Slime. And if you're watching at home, that is what it's on your center monitor there. And this was a game based loosely on Centipede where a spawner would fall down the screen and you have full movement on the screen. It's a very large grid. And it would leave little pods, little blobs on the downward stroke. And those would grow, and as they grow, they would have little hatchlings inside of them that would break out of the slime. And this was a very unique game because the only way to die is if you got hit by a spawner going down, up and down the screen, or the other enemy that goes across the screen. If you run into those will kill you. If the slime goes to expand and you are in its little aura, it will crush you and kill you. But the little eggs, the little tadpoles inside the slime won't actually kill you. It just deducts from your score. So it's a constant risk versus reward. You can have a really good game going and then get clobbered by all these little tadpole things, the little slime babies, and your score just gets erased. It's brutal. Aaron, I know that you had no intentions to look into this game. Did you happen to take a peek?
I did have a peek. Once I saw that we were both on one of his games, and this was the other one.
Yeah.
You could tell that this is the third one he did, because I'm pretty sure it's the last one he did of the pet games, because this is an advanced. I think this is the best of the three? I don't.
I don't either.
But in terms of the graphical advancement, the gameplay, the speed, the movement, the fact that this huge slime mound comes out, it's quite impressive, actually. I mean, it's one of the best things I've seen.
How it grows and stuff is pretty neat.
Yeah, it's very impressive. And this one is probably this is he mentioned it was sort of based on the P, but it's very loosely based. I would say this is probably his most original work as well.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah.
I would agree with that. Aaron, did you have enough playtime with this to give an opinion, or do you feel that's a little unjustified?
I think it's one you should give a shot. You know, the whole time I was playing, I was thinking, man, I wish I had a trackball. This would be a fun one to rig up with a track. I'm serious. I mean, it's totally like set up in terms of the movement. It'd be perfect to have a trackball to control. But yeah, it's good stuff. I thought it was pretty good. Pretty good game and very graphically pleasing. I will say that.
For sure. I agree. Aaron, I believe you wanted me to take the reins of first time. So I will get right into my game.
That was the worst way to explain. I'm going to talk first I've ever heard. Go ahead. I'm starting to regret my choice now.
I took a look at Star Spore.
Oh, man.
Aaron, we did not plan on making this a Jim Subbers tribute video.
I can't figure that out. How did we do that? That's not the first time we both picked the same thing from one. This guy, we had three games, God sakes. We picked the two of them.
We literally, this was just, we picked two games.
Yep. No one's going to believe that.
Yeah, I know.
You and I have trouble. I'm me. But we
didn't. Independent of each other.
We never talk.
Nope.
I mean, ever.
No,
anything.
Outside of the show, we're disgusted and repelled by each other.
Yeah.
But when I saw that this game was so highly recommended by so many people, because I wanted to end this pet series with a bang.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I was looking for the best. And Star Spores just kept coming up over and over. So what is Star Spores? Star Spores clearly influenced by Galaga and Phoenix. I think those would be the two I would point out as the most influence that I see in the game. It's a shooter. You're at the bottom. You're stuck just going left and right, and you have a double ship, just like Galaga after you get a ship captured.
Yeah.
And at the top of the screen are spores, eggs, if you will. And when you shoot one of these eggs, an enemy will come out. And the enemy is based not only on what stage you're on, but there are a few random enemies that can be in the eggs that you can't kill. You have to just kill everything else to get through the stage. You have a time limit at the top that ticks down. It's fairly generous, especially in the beginning.
I can screw you.
Yeah, and you are awarded bonuses at the end of this, once you destroy all the enemies, of bonus time. So why is this special? This has been done a million times. This is special because there are seven stages, and every stage has a different enemy with a different graphic, with a different behavior, and with a different attack. And that variety, and when you get through with seven, you loop back around, it's a little bit faster. The variety in these enemy ships are off the chart good. Your first one is your basic round enemy. You shoot it. It shoots down at you. It will work its way down the screen and try to run into your ship and then retreat back to about mid-screen. Pretty common stuff. But as you go along, the enemies evolve, and it does some things that I've never seen in shooters before. This was 82, and it's doing stuff I've never seen. I've played video games for 30, 40 years.
Yeah, you're right.
So some of the things that it does that I've never seen before. There are ships, I believe it is on stage 5 or 6, that look like lawn darts.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah, they do.
And once you hatch them out of their egg, they're coming for you. And you can't shoot and destroy them. When you shoot them, it only pauses them. And you have to wait until they come all the way down, hit the bottom of the screen, turn around, and start to retreat. And when they start that retreat pattern, you can actually get in behind them, shoot them, and blow them up. And you're thinking, man, that doesn't sound that great. I mean, Galaga had stuff that was going down the screen and then coming back. No. In this atmosphere, with these graphics, with this feel, it's amazing how difficult these enemies are, first of all, and how fun they are. Because you get to choose how these things hatch out of the eggs. When you shoot the egg, that's when the ship is released and comes down at you. A few other things that it does really well. Not all enemies want to fight. Some will make a break for it. They'll try to run off the side of the screen.
Especially if Dig Dug. Sometimes just get bored and they go away.
And if you shoot the ones that are retreating, you get more points than you normally would. It actually has a little graphic that shows how many points you'd get. Or if it leaves, it just leaves. It's not coming back. It's gone. And it's completely random on which ones will do this.
Yeah.
It's that kind of variety that is just incredibly awesome. The other thing, Aaron, that just blew my socks off once I figured out what was going on, I believe, last stage are these itty-bitty little diamond enemies. And they shoot bullets. Almost all these enemies at some point will shoot a bullet as like the basic attack. But these things will also shoot little lightning bolts. And they would hit me, and I wouldn't blow up. I was like, well, what's going on? They ain't there to blow you up, brother. They're there to reduce the time you have to complete the stage.
Yeah.
And if you run out of time, you die. So they're killing you just through the use of the time bar. So brilliant.
Yeah.
So brilliant. I love that.
You know, you've also got, this is something that, just to hop in for a second along those lines, there's a guy, a special guy, that would just show up. He could be on the first level.
Yeah.
And he looks different than the other ships.
And you can't kill him. You
can't kill him. If you just don't fool with him, you're fine. But anytime you shoot him, he shoots one of those electrical bolts down.
Yes.
Now, he'll also shoot regular bullet on occasion.
Almost everyone has a regular bullet.
Right, but when I first saw this guy, I'm like, what's going on, you know, with this guy? What is this lightning bolt? And that's what it was. It took me a while to figure out, but it can happen on the very first level. It can be the first guy you pop out of a pod.
Yep.
You know, so that mixes it up. He doesn't appear every time.
No, no. And you might go a whole game and never see
him.
Yeah. The other thing that's really fun about this game is when you die, brother.
Yeah.
You blow up this huge, pixelated, free-floating explosion that just kind of drizzles down the screen after the initial propulsion. And then it slides. It does one of those cutaway slides and then comes back.
Yeah.
Awesome.
It's good.
Awesome. I thoroughly enjoyed this game, Aaron. I can see why this is one of almost all his games, I believe, were eventually ported to the TRS-80, to the...
Well, there's some conjecture. See, that's actually what I read. This came from the TRS-80 because I believe I read that this guy was buddies with the guy that did the TRS-80.
He was. But... I don't think this was...
I think they brought this over.
I think it was a joint effort.
Was it? Yeah. I didn't read that, but I mean, it came out in 82, same year. And I will say, looking at and we both are big fans of the TRS-80 story.
Of course, yeah.
This one looks better to me. It looks... I didn't play the TRS-80, but I saw our good buddy Buck Owens, who really helped us a lot in this episode, had a go with the TRS-80 one, and I thought this was a superior... looking version.
Yeah. And now this, of course, we have a little bit of an advantage being on an emulator because on a CRT monitor, I've seen this played live, videos of it.
Yeah.
And on a real system. And there is blur because things are moving so quickly. Of course, that's going to be dependent on your monitor.
Yeah.
But the PET, being the PET, you're pretty much, you got the monitor you got.
Yeah.
So there was some blurring on this. It was not Game Boy bad. Everything was still very, very playable, but having those neat, crisp graphics was so much fun to play with. I would say, and this might tip my hand a little bit, Aaron, but I would say this is my favorite pet game. I really enjoyed this.
You like it better than Acquire?
Yes. Yep. I really enjoyed my time with this.
We played some good pet games, but I'd say I enjoyed this. It's funny, when this comes up, and you're like, oh, man, double ship action. That's an eye-catcher, but you realize fairly quickly that, like, being double ship is you're really
it lost. Is not necessarily a good thing.
You know?
Yeah.
And so it and some of those is tough. This game is you can jump right in, you know. And it, by the way, you can play any of these games in a browser with little effort. I mean, any problem. You're right. It doesn't look as sharp on the real thing, but I mean, listen. That's one of the advantages of playing a pet game from 1982 and 2023. We've got to give us something, and that's the thing we're gonna get. But I agree with everything you said. The aliens are different. The blonde dart ones are particularly. It's funny once you understand how to fight them. Most games like this just go there blazing with your gun. But on that level, you don't blaze with your gun.
No,
it's like heat seeking. They'll come after you. I like the transitions in this. I like the high score thing. I found a poke for this that lets you have unlimited
life. You don't need that.
I mentioned this for a reason. So I got to run through this thing about a million times. So I mean, I think it's about seven levels before it switches over and repeats. I didn't even notice that. I don't know if it even gets any harder. I don't think it does.
It does. It does seem to speed up. I've looped it three times and the ships, especially the line dart ships, I started really having trouble with. That's a hard stage though. It's all an illusion.
You can apparently get extra man because I ended up getting one after a while. I don't know if you knew that. So there's that. But I mean, listen, this game isn't like super duper original, but it's fun. It plays well. And that's no easy task on a machine this old.
Yes.
To have something that you can sit down and play. So I really enjoyed it. And the thing is, you can see for a guy who, you got to remember all the games we talked about on the pet from this guy, Summers, he wrote these when he was still in high school.
Yes.
He was in high school. So this game came from a guy who taught himself how to play, make games, and he was still going to school.
Yeah.
High school.
Yeah, so, and he was writing them for himself, because he wanted stuff to play on his computer, and for his friends.
You would make a game that then you and your friends could all have high scores on. By the way, he set scores in these games.
Yes.
They're good scores.
Yeah, they're real good.
So, yeah. But I enjoyed this one quite a bit, Brent. I think this is a real winner.
I do as well. Now, Aaron, you obviously brought something different to the table.
Let's have a look at the Discord on this thing real quick.
Oh, you know what? I apologize.
Jump out the door, Speedy. You said it's going to be a
quick one. Things to do.
So we actually got some action on this. I want to give a big shout out to Buck Owens in the Discord who really, he made it real easy for us. It was just, although really, I didn't have that much trouble once I found the ROM. One thing, if you're going to play this at home, remember two things for using the emulator online. Make sure your caps lock's on.
Yep.
Remember that from before? We learned that lesson.
Yep.
I remembered. And also, make sure you have the keyboard in game mode.
Yep.
Game mode. Pajaco had a go at these games, the brand here. Of course, Pajaco usually does. So, Star Spores. At first, I thought this was going to be a clone of Eagle Empire from the arcade, but 1 minute in, and I can see it is clearly not that. And if you think having a twin can ship is a great thing, well, no, it ain't. Because for one, it makes you a bigger target to hit. And two, your shots are just far enough apart to pass on either side of enemies. And in one later level, you're going to be careful about when you shoot, not go all Han Solo and blast up the place.
Yep.
Some enemies just seem to get bored and run off the edge of the screen after you free them. So having lots of enemies on the loose at once isn't the best strategy for a high score. Oh, and yeah, you are against the clock, so the quicker you get through, the better you score. So the pressure is always on. Graphically, this one is quite chunky,
but it runs and plays well, and the explosion animations and screen refresh when you die is pretty awesome.
Yes.
Although it would have been good to be able to skip that after a few times seeing it.
No.
You're really just going to get back into the action. It's not that long, but I can see what I thought that. Sound, again, for the pet is limited, but good at what it, at the job it does well. Overall, though, another really solid, fun game for the pet. And again, something I can really have seen myself playing the heck of back in the day, 8 out of 10.
Yeah.
So a pretty high praise there on that one. I think it's a fun game. I mean, it's, I'll put it this way. It's fairly universally praised because I heard people talking about it on forums of everywhere for over a series of decades.
Yes.
So people knew about it.
Yep.
And enjoyed it.
Yeah, I agree. I wholeheartedly agree.
Yeah.
Now, Aaron, what did you... I brought gold to the table. Solid gold. What did you bring?
I brought triple gold, brother. Because the game I chose, again, another one of the Summers collection here, was a fun title called Astro Rescue. Now, let's get to the nitty-gritty here before I get into the pet version. This Astro Rescue, Buck I had some discussion on the forums about this game. So this game is a clone of an arcade game, and it may be a clone of a clone. Double clone. So there was a game released in the arcades back in 79. It's funny. I can't remember if I remember this or not. Does that make any sense? It was called Lunar Rescue, released November of 79. From Taito. Yes, they've been around that long.
Yep.
Developed by Taito. And this was a game where you had to, there was a mothership at the top of the screen that dropped your ship down to an asteroid field. You had to land on the planet, rescue an astronaut, and then take him back to the ship through the asteroid field. Sound familiar? It looked a lot like this. Of course, the graphics were better, and it was a vertical game, so you had a lot more real estate to cover with your screen. And of course, if you want to get real technical, if you've ever played Lunar Lander, where you actually guide a ship down and land on a planet,
yeah,
that's a sort of along the same lines, I believe.
No, I disagree with that totally, because you can land on the platform going max speed.
Well, I'm just saying, there's a precedent for landing like you do on a planet. I think Taito also did that one. I could be wrong. Don't hold me to that. So I looked around. Versions of Lunar Rescue were released on, as far as I could tell, on the ZX81, the VIC, a couple on the Speccy, the C64, TRSA Model 1, the Mac, and the Coco. They all had like varying degrees of ports of this. So get this, the TRS-81, and this is where I got the whole idea about the going into the boxes. So I was looking, the TRS-80, this is, we're talking about the original TRSA Model 1.
Yep.
This came out in 82. So who put this out? Big Five Software. You know who that is?
No.
You ever heard of a game called Miner 2049?
Oh, yeah.
The same outfit did it, and the same programmers, Bill Hoog and Jeff Conyu, they did this one in 82. And I believe this is the last TRS-80 game they did. They went from this to the Atari 8-bits and did Miner 2049. This has a real awesome box. But basically, it's sort of the same basic bear, homie.
Right.
By the way, just for reference, this sold brand new with its box for Big Five for $15.95. So that's what you were paying for this if you got this from the TRS-80. And so I thought that was interesting. So let's flash forward a little bit, now that we've covered that stuff, to the actual game on the PET. So the PET game is called Astro Rescue. Again, released in 82 from Jim Summers. One thing I noticed right away when this game comes up, at the bottom, there's a scroll.
Yeah.
Both the R games have sort of a similar set.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, space bar. And on the TRS-80 version, if you hit the space bar, it gives you like a background and all the enemies. And this, it does, we don't get that kind of action here. But it does say at the bottom, it scrolls along the bottom. It says, unauthorized copying of this program is punishable 7 hours of forced Wampus games.
Yeah.
So, I thought that found... I found that highly amusing. These games also, we didn't mention, but this, you've got, I know you can play, some of these have one or two player support, too.
All of them. Yeah. All of his games did. That was a big deal to him.
Yeah, so, of course, you have to, it's Hot Seat, of course. So, Lunar Rescue, what do you do in this crazy game? Well, this is a game where you are tasked
with dropping a ship from like a picture a big mothership with like a big cargo bay or docking bay.
Yeah.
And it goes across the top of the screen back and forth. All right. And then you're in it, your screen, have a little lander that is in the docking bay. When you hit the button, you will release the docking bay and start drifting downwards towards the planet. The planet has three like landing pads on it. And then on the two mountains, there's a planet down there, and there are like mountains on either side that have guys standing on them.
Yep.
I will say in the TRS-80 version, the little guys yell help, I believe. And this person, they stand there. And so your job is to get down, land. One of these guys will just sort of magically appear in your ship. And then you take back off. And when you take back off, you've got to negotiate your way through the asteroid field, get back to the mothership. When I first started playing this, I didn't realize you could shoot. And it was a lot harder to not be able to shoot or do anything. I just thought you basically went down and
you just drifted back
and I
up.
I thought to myself, man, this is one hard game. So when I read that you could fire, I'm like, oh my God, that makes it a lot easier. So on the way, so when you're going down, if you hit the space bar a lot, you'll sort of kind of slow down.
Yeah, you'll slow your descent. But
there's a reason for some of this. It's a programming reason, which I'll get to. When you go back up, and you're firing, if you start laying on the fire button, you'll go fast.
Yeah, if you just hold the fire button, you'll use your thrusters instead of shooting.
I read in the interview that Ms. Summers said that, like, because of his lack of knowledge on a program, that this game, everything stops when certain things happen. And so it's not a bug, it's a feature when you're doing that stuff, because it's probably just because of some inefficiencies in his programming ability that happens. There are six guys at the bottom of the screen. When you get down and get them all, there's six more show up. Yep. And also, every time you land, the pad gets smaller, you know? But I never really had a whole lot of issue with that. The funny thing about this game is, when you're coming down, assume you don't release until you hit the button, so you got to have a clear path. But when you're coming down, you can get down okay. Getting back up can be a lot harder, and one of the main reasons is it's because you're the jerks that drive the mothership. When you pick up a man, the mothership will basically start moving again.
Yep.
And I don't know if it's trying to help you or just I don't know what they're doing, but whatever they're doing, it's like if you try to put the frog in the hole and frog or the hole move.
Yeah.
You're trying to get land, and by the way, there's no way to totally stop. So if that thing's out of your reach, you're just going to careen into the side of it and miss it.
Yes.
And so you'll get killed a lot of times just by not being able to get back to the mothership.
Yep.
And sometimes the mothership doesn't care where the asteroids are at. So if there's a big wave of asteroids, it might park in the worst conceivable spot for you to stick your guy in. So that can get old real quick. The ship has a number on it, 62530. Like, what is that?
The high score.
Oh, that's
whatever the high score is.
Oh, that's awesome. I didn't even know that. So that's kind of cool. You have multiple levels of this I know once you get far enough in to this game, I can only describe like a giant plan or something that kind of hurdles through.
I always thought of it like a lunar storm.
Is that what that is?
Yeah.
Anyway, this thing is the double death.
Yes.
This game's hard enough without the lunar storm or whatever it is coming in. This makes it that much harder to get to your guy. But this is just a game that just repeats over and over until you die. That's it.
Yeah.
It's got pretty good.
Don't think you're going to be playing for hours.
No.
10 minutes is an incredibly super awesome game.
It's got some pretty decent sound. I mean, when you get killed, it kind of makes a noise.
Yeah.
That sounds sort of like explosion. So, I mean, it's not that bad. You know, your shots sound like your shots. The game, this asteroids that scroll into movement, it's not as smooth as your game.
Correct.
And I believe this was his first effort, I think, was this game before he moved on to yours. And then ultimately did Slime.
Don't let that fool you. This is still super playable.
Oh, yeah. But I'm saying you're playing within the limitations of this guy's programming skills on the pet. Like I said, whenever you shoot or do certain things, I mean, everything sort of, there's a lot of just like bump, bump, bump moving around. It's not like, it's not the best when it comes to scrolling the asteroids. But overall, I enjoyed the game, frankly. I thought it was a lot of fun. What did you think of it?
I think you're selling this incredibly short.
Think I'm selling it short. That's the game.
This is probably my second favorite pet game of all time. And the reason why is there is complexity in its simplicity. Where you get to choose where you get dropped off.
Yeah.
Okay? And the ship just bounces left to right on the side of the screen. So when you hit the space bar, if the mothership was going left when you departed to the planet, when you land and take off again, it's going to start moving left. And then when it hits the side of the screen, it's going to bounce off, move a little bit, and then stop until you actually port back with the ship. Knowing this going in determines on what platform makes sense to land on. If the ship is already, you know, when you get to the planet, your mothership is going to start moving left. You want to go for a platform that's on the left, as long as there's one available. And then that way, when you take off, as you're flying straight up, the mothership's actually moving over top of you to receive you. It's that kind of thing that if you think about it while you're playing, it makes it so much better, makes it so much more fun. When you are flying up to get back to the ship, yes, you can shoot things. Sometimes it's necessary. Do not go out of your way to shoot stuff, though. Hold that button. Use those thrusters. Get to that mothership, because the biggest point bonus you can get in this game is saving all six astronauts. If there's one in your ship and you blow up, you can't. That's it. You lose that bonus until you save the remaining ones and then get six new people. If you were on your way down to the planet and blow up, though, that's fine. You can still get the bonus. That's super good programming, because the game could have always said, you just have to come back six times, you're going to get the bonus, everything's good. But he actually had the foresight, be it on purpose or an accident, to say, there was no astronaut in that ship, your bonus is still safe. Brilliant. That's brilliant. The lunar storms suck, because they will come out of nowhere. They're huge.
They look cool.
Oh, they look awesome. But I mean, from playing perspective, they're horrible.
Yeah.
Because they move quickly. Sometimes you are just in the path of one that's sorry about your luck. Yeah.
And asteroids, I mean, it's sort of similar. Sometimes you just bone.
Well, they're far more predictable, right, though.
But I'm just saying, sometimes if you're, for example, if your guy decides to park the ship on the side of the screen, an asteroid might just
No. That's all up to you. Because wherever you park it, you know it's going to move so much as you blast back off the planet.
But
so,
it still doesn't make the asteroid.
You can always, if you wanted to, if you were patient and you wanted to take the time, you could always have your mothership be in the center of the screen when you start flying back up to meet it, by just knowing how far it's going to move, because it moves the same amount every time. That is the strategy of this game. That's the beauty of this game. There is so many fine details that go into things like that, that it works out and makes it that much more fun to play. I've tried playing this a few different ways. I tried shooting the asteroids. I tried just going for the astronaut bonus. I tried really working on ship manipulation. The reason why I mention that is not because I'm some super awesome gamer. It's that this game gives you the ability to explore those options, and that makes it really, really good.
Yeah.
Really good. This is 82. Most complexities were just, am I going to put in one quarter or two quarters? So for this to actually make you think as you play, super fun. Super fun. I really enjoyed this.
Yeah, I thought it was a good game. We mentioned when we were doing Star Spores that, like, he ultimately ended up porting this to the C64. I don't know if you read, we didn't touch
on it. Rewriting it. He didn't port it. Well, rewrote it.
It's still a port.
Yeah, I agree.
And if you've ever played a game called Alien Brood, that's his game. And I don't know if you read this part of the interview where we talked about he intended on selling this game, by the way.
Yeah, and he screwed himself.
And he actually got a games shop or a computer store to give him a floppy drive to work on. And then his buddy got a copy
for free.
And they were playing it in the store, and the guy's like, give me back the floppy.
Yeah.
Screw you. But anyway,
And it's amazing that one little wrinkle that one little wrinkle in this dude's timeline could have very well altered his life path forever.
It may.
Because if he would have sold a game and made a lot of money, I feel, I not knowing the guy outside of a couple interviews and things I read about him, I feel that could have put him on a path to become a video game designer, and he might have became one of the best designers we ever know. Or he could have crashed and burned. It could have been the end of his life. It could have ruined him.
The end of his life?
Well, I mean,
thank God they didn't pirate that game then.
But what I'm saying is there are so many little basement developers like this, and it's rare that we get to highlight one that had done such good work and then just completely walked away from the industry.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what this guy did.
Well, the reason I want to bring up Alien Brood is, you got to see what Star Wars would be like on a more powerful system.
Yes.
And I wish that could have been the same for this game, because Aster Rescue, I think, could have really done quite nicely as a game that got moved up to a slightly more powerful machine, or if he'd redone it with advanced knowledge of smoother scroll
right.
And whatnot, because that's...
And he learned all that stuff just later.
That's sort of what hamstrings this game, is just that it's the herky-jerkiness of it.
I agree.
But, I mean, it's still a fun game.
Absolutely.
I enjoyed playing it. I'm torn on which of the two games I like more. I mean, your game is smoother, and your game has it's a straight up smooth arcade experience.
I think Star Wars has more heart.
Well, this game, I think there's more
variety.
I think this game's got more high score type possibility.
Astro Rescue is more intense. More intense,
Which I like. We did get a look at this one also from Pajaco. I will say Buck was tearing these up too, so I know Buck played the heck out of them. Pajaco chimes in, although this is missing the aliens, Astro Rescue is a really good version of Lunar Rescue made using Petsky characters. It looks and plays at a fair speed and is playable mostly. Sound for a machine with not much, Jack in that department does the job and is pretty good. That's what I said. But during ascents, it is common to end up being chased across the screen by faster moving asteroids. You know you can't outrun them. If you do, you'll not make it to the ship. This is where I lost many lives. The collisions are a little trigger happy and sometimes seem to get hit before the asteroid has actually touched you. It is like the code is updating and checking variables before the screen has redrawn. Maybe an emulation issue, though. Possible. Let's get back to 1982 and imagine I was very lucky enough to own a pet back then, that I would have enjoyed this and been less critical. Very probably, yes. So for a pet game, this is pretty solid. 8 out of 10 games. And he goes on to also mention the Buck. Thank Buck. You have to hold down... you have to hold down a key to steer left and right, which is actually the machine having caps lock on, which we mentioned. Anytime you play games with a pet, turn on that caps lock.
Yep.
It's a must have. But yeah, I enjoyed both these quite a bit, the brand.
Absolutely.
And once again, the pet has delivered the goods. And I'm hoping it's somewhere on the line, we're going to get back into the TRSA model 1, 2, or 3, where we get a little more of this action, because these systems... We've mentioned this before on these monochrome systems, these old systems from the late 70s, early 80s. Like, you'd think to yourself, man, these things are going to be duds. Man, they had creative, talented guys. And you could tell a guy like this dude, Summers, is a guy. These are games that are, you can see how a high school kid could write these games. Why? He spent his time in the arcades.
Yeah.
He's a gamer, and he knows what gamers like, because we're gamers. And what they liked back in those days, and I still am this way, are twitchy shooting games, point pressing games, high score games, stuff. And he picked ones that the pet could handle and effectively. And I salute the man.
And he did an incredible job getting him on the screen.
Yeah. And the fact that me and you both independently, I can't stress this enough, we did not collude on this. And so when Brent ended up picking another game, this guy had no idea until I saw the guys in the Discord talking about it. You know, and then once I played it, I could tell, I was like, oh, there it is.
Yeah.
But I mean, I don't know how you picked your games for the pet, but I generally go through and just try to, I watch videos and stuff and try to see stuff that looks interesting to me and doesn't look like the same old, and Listen, this game popped out at me, and I'm sure yours is the same way. So yeah. Kudos. I had a lot of fun with that one.
Yeah, Aaron, we are not spinning the wheel this week. No. There is no wheel theme to chime in.
Oh, I can't yell at you again.
No, oh, no, no, wait, wait a minute, wait a minute.
Come on.
Look, look, there's wheel theme.
Oh, there it is. There it is, okay.
But no, we won't be doing that this week, Aaron.
Yeah.
Because next week, we're going to be doing a little...
Atari ST show.
That's right. And then the week after that's a little...
Thanks for giving marathon. Explain to the people... because now we can actually kind of push it. What are we doing? You have a gimmick this year. Do you want to disclose the gimmick?
No, I'm not going to disclose the gimmick.
Okay,
that's a game time.
You haven't even told me the gimmick. That's why I don't know. Tell the people what we're doing.
Thanksgiving will be the Friday after Thanksgiving. We are going to just sit around, play some games. We're going to be streaming from about 8 to 10 hours. Of just nonstop gaming goodness. And this is just a way for people who don't want to watch football, who are still in their food coma from Thanksgiving, or just are celebrating around the world, want to come in, watch us, have a good time. This is not about raising money. There's no charities at stake. We're not trying to get new subs or Patreon memberships. I mean, if that's your prerogative, that's all your business. But we're just... saying thank you for all of that support that you do give us throughout the year.
And it's an excuse to sit around playing games.
And is an excuse to play games. But we're going to be doing that, which will take the slot of ARG.
Right.
So after that, we will be back to ZX Spectrum, I believe.
Correct. I will say next week. Let's talk about next week. The Thanksgiving Marathon 2 weeks away.
Yes.
Next week, we'll be playing games... on the venerable Atari ST, on the Atari ST show. And the game we'll be playing is Black Lamp. Lamp. I've not played this game yet, but I've seen, I watched the footage, did a little research, and it looks quite interesting. I can't wait to dig into it. It should be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And the ST, it's funny. It's a real mixed bag of stuff. You don't ever know what you're going to get. You know, like I said, the ZX Spectrum, the hit and miss ratio is pretty high. It's pretty accurate. You mostly get pretty good games.
Yeah.
The ST, you can get a great game, and then you can get something that the dog should bury. So you never know what you're going to get. But by God, we're hoping. We got high hopes for Black Lamp.
And you got anything else for the people?
I do have one more thing for the people, Brent. I do. Guess what today is, everybody? It's the Brent's birthday. Brent. I bought this just for you. Look, everybody.
Oh, it's a bag.
It's a bag.
Aaron, I already have a bag. Thanks, though.
Okay, I'll just take this back then. Here you go. You can open that up. It's an ARG-related gift, I think. But make sure you read the card. In fact, I'll read the card while you get out the gift.
Okay. Here, Aaron. Here's my birthday card.
This is Brent's birthday card. Because I think this encapsulates the way I feel of the brand. Look at that, everybody. If you're watching at home. There's the lovely card. The card on the front says, a birthday wish for someone special. And then the inside says, can't tell you just how much you mean because you mean so much. Your loving ways are special to the many lives you touch. And now that it's your birthday, words can only start to say how much you've wished the kind of joy you always give away. Happy birthday. I love you, Aaron and Luke.
Oh,
everybody. Isn't that nice?
That was cheesy as cheesy gets.
What do you mean? That's it. That encapsulates my feelings.
That was heartfelt.
Now you going to show the people what you got there?
I am.
You don't know what you've got, do you?
Nope. Look, it's a thing.
It's the mister, everybody. Oh. It's a mister.
Wow. Neat.
It's a mister. I've been hanging on to that thing for a while, waiting for you, and there it is. Brand new Mister with the memory upgrade in it. It is ready to go. It also put a 256 gigger in there. I've already jacked up I'm going to put all the goodies on there for you.
Super nice. Thank you very much.
That's a Mister.
I've been trying like crazy to get one of these.
I love the fact that you looked at it. You really had, we're back. Well, we had no idea what it was.
In the box is
that's the box a Mister comes in.
Well, I know, but it's
a DE10 Nano.
I've never seen a Mister box before. So I was like, oh, Aaron got me a some kind of card.
You dummy. Now listen, here's the thing about a mister. You know, because now that you've taken over for Boat on all these shows, it's Boat had to do all of his Boat stuff. That means that you have to play all kinds of crazy stuff, including Atari ST. Sometimes you can't, stuff that's hard to emulate, brother.
Yeah.
And the mister makes it happen. So that's a gift they'll keep on giving. Happy birthday to Brent. Tell everybody how old you are today, Brent.
46?
Oh, is that so? You're not that young.
No, yeah, I'm 46.
51, ladies and gentlemen.
No, that's you. No, that's not even you.
Years old, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you very much for this, Aaron. I am going to use the heck out of that because I desperately need something that can emulate some of the stuff that just doesn't emulate right.
Yeah, because let's face facts. You're a ham.
Super nice.
There you go, everybody.
Oops, I should probably put the manuals back
in. All right. We're probably end the show now. Time to go have your birthday cake.
Oh, cake.
Yeah, so thanks, everybody, for joining us. Again, we'll be back next week for Black Blamp on the Atari ST show. And in 2 weeks, on the Friday after Thanksgiving, we'll be back for Thanksgiving Marathon. Everybody have a nice week. We'll catch you guys on the flip side.